Okay, so we are talking today a little bit about music itself. Now, we don't get to spend much time on this because we want to get on to talking about music in church worship and in our lives, but we did want to spend just a little bit of time touching on God's creative miracle of music. And this is a subject you could study for a lifetime. Oh my goodness, and I am not a musician or a musicologist or an audiologist or a neurologist or any kind of ologist. I'm just Pastor Tim. So this is not a drop in a bucket today. This is a drop in an ocean today. But that's okay because we're a church, not a musical conservatory. And our point is just to get a brief reminder of why music is such a marvelous gift. God brilliantly designed it to bless our lives, to aid our worship, to point us to our Creator. Do we have the lights on? Normal lights? If we're recording, we're going to want them. God brilliantly designed it to bless our lives, to aid our worship, to point to our Creator, and to continue for all of eternity because of its endless possibilities. What a gift that is. So in other words, when God tells us to sing, that is not like Pharaoh telling the Egyptians, make bricks, figure it out. He did not leave us impoverished. He gave us rich, rich gifts to do that with. So the creative miracle of music. But what is music? It is famously difficult to define, and I'm not going to define it. I'm just going to talk about why it's hard to define, because that's interesting. The Oxford English Dictionary says, vocal or instrumental sounds, or both, combined in such a way as to produce beauty of form, harmony, and expression of emotion. So just that little sentence right there shows the incredible complexity of what God created. How many different elements are in that sentence? Voices or instruments or both, beauty, form, harmony, emotion. Merriam-Webster, the science or art of ordering tones or sounds in succession, in combination, and in temporal relationships to produce a composition having unity and continuity. So again, there's a lot there. Note the first words, the science or art. I don't think it's very often that the dictionary leaves it up to you to decide what something is. Like, their job is to define things. But here they're like, you figure it out. And how about this from Wikipedia, the source of all that is true and right. Music is the arrangement of sound to create some combination of form, harmony, melody, rhythm, or otherwise expressive content. So you just arrange that sound to express, and apparently you've got music. So again, the point is just they're flailing a bit to try to nail this down. And we can say, why? I mean, music is so simple. Tiny children can love it and make it. Surely we can define it. But underlying it is a phenomenal complexity far beyond anyone except God could ever invent. So two little tiny examples of the miracle of music. I mean, they're big examples, but I just mean what we're saying about them is tiny, and there's so many more. So first of all, let's consider pitch. This is what we sometimes refer to as the note, whether it's a high note or a low note. It's the difference between one note struck on the piano and a different note. So what happens over here when we play a note is that a hammer strikes a string, the string causes air molecules to vibrate, those vibrations reach your ear, but because the piano strings are different weights and different lengths and are strung at different tensions, they vibrate air molecules differently. And so when he hits a different key from the one he just hit, you hear a different pitch. And we might even give those names, like A or C, and to get into scales and all that would be way beyond what we can do today. But here's the point for now. Vibrating air molecules don't really have pitch. They're just vibrating air molecules. What gives them pitch is when your ear and your brain take those vibrations and calculate them and interpret them into something musical, like notes higher and lower. All of that happens in your brain. Now, working off of something that's going on in the physical world around you, but in a sense, we could say that the world would have no sound and no taste and no color if our brains weren't designed to interpret the world in those ways. You see what I'm saying? The world has physical properties, like molecules vibrate, but only the human brain can interpret those things as marvelous tastes and colors and music. That is part of God's miracle. All right, and then one other tiny example is timbre, also referred to previously today as timber.
It's timbre because it's a French word, and the French don't know how letters work. So they would say timbre, but that's silly, so we anglicize it as timbre. But what is timbre? Timbre is just the unique sound quality that distinguishes one voice from another, one instrument from another. It's what we call tone color when we describe something as a dark sound or a bright sound or a heavy sound or a light sound. We're talking about timbre. It's how you can tell the difference between the voices of people that you know. You hear someone behind you, and what you're hearing is not just the words they're saying or just the volume. You're hearing the unique combination of sounds, the unique recipe of pitches that create their voice, timbre. It's also why we can do things like we can manipulate the timbre of our own voice, right? And so you can say, hello, or you can say, oh, and say,
hello.
What I changed was the combination of sounds that create tone quality, and so that's timbre. We can do that in singing too, by the way. So you can sing hello, hello. That's not a different pitch. That's the same frequency, just a different timbre. Hello, all the same thing. And so we all congregationally bring our unique vocal timbres together and create a unique sound that doesn't exist anywhere or anytime other than in this room this morning when you all did that, and that is super cool. But timbre, what causes that? What is making those changes? And this is part of the science part of music, and this is this connects to the single coolest aspect of music that no one knows about, except music nerds. But it's the most wonderful, scientific, magical, mind-blowing aspect of music that for me is the number one evidence for music as an invention, as a creation with a designer, not something that just happens. And it's because all the properties of music that we know exist in hard science. They exist in physics. So I'm going to do a couple nerdy things real fast. So here's the first slide. And this is about what's called the overtone series. What you're looking at is, think of strings that are vibrating. So picture strings on a guitar, right? Stretch from one end to the other. And we measure pitch by how many times per second a string vibrates. So for example, this string on the piano, what you're hearing is the hammer struck the string and it started a vibrational wave, and it travels from one end of the string to the other and back 110 times every second. That's what hertz are. So what you're hearing is 110 vibrations per second. And you perceive that as that note. Now, if I cut that string in half, picture someone playing a guitar, and they put their finger down on the string, what they're doing is effectively shortening the string. If you cut a string exactly in half, it vibrates twice as fast. So this one's 110, and if I double that to 220, I get this one. It's the same pitch. We happen to call it A. But that's a different vibration. Okay, so general principle, we could talk about this for a long time, we're gonna go on. So translate that into music on the next slide. You don't have to read music to understand this, but that's just that concept laid out on a musical staff in notes. So you see that second one says 110, that's 110 hertz, and then there's one above it that says 220, etc. But here's what's actually happening, and that is, if we go back to the, go, sorry, just go to the next slide. So when I vibrate this string, it's vibrating at 110 oscillations per second, but it's also vibrating at 220. That string is doing two things, and at 330, and at 430, and at 550, and at 660. That one string actually has all those pitches inside of it. So if you could look at that string, it would look like the next slide. What you're actually hearing is this. The entire overtone series exists inside of that one string. It's vibrating in lots of different ways, like that. And what we hear, when you hear the 110 vibrations per second, you think, oh, that's a pitch. But you are hearing all the other pitches. You just don't know that you're hearing them because they're what we call overtones. And they are what give that note its timbre. They are what make it sound like a piano and not a trumpet or not a human voice. Is different than. Because the piano is highlighting certain overtones and filtering other ones out. Or when I sing it, or when a trumpet plays it, when a violin plays it, you're hearing some of those vibrations more than others. So it's a particular cocktail of all of those pitches. And you say, wait a minute, I'm only hearing one note. You're saying I'm hearing dozens of notes? Yes, you are. But your brain has learned to interpret it as something else other than what we think of as a pitch of a note. Have you ever looked really closely at your blue jeans? What color are your blue jeans? Well, if you look really closely, they're actually blue and white. And if you, the seamstress is nodding. Thank you, Lisa, for confirming my fabric analogy. If you put it under a microscope, you see blue threads and white threads woven together. But when you zoom out, all you see is one shade of blue. That's what's happening here. Your ear is hearing lots of pitches all woven together, and we condense it down and simplify it and say, it's actually just one pitch. And this is not something that we invented. This is something that we discovered. One more thing, and I'm done, I promise.
I'm not trying to rush you. Okay. I just have stuff to say that I'm excited about.
Okay.
But you're excited about your stuff to say.
I know, and I'm trying to do it in 3 minutes.
You're
That's
doing
impossible.
Awesome.
Okay.
I'm going to step over here and stop being too eager.
So here's the last thing I want to say about overtones, and that is the first overtone in the series is this one, and the next one is this one, and the next one is this one, and then this one. Okay, so all of those notes are inside of that note. And if we go up mathematically up the overtone series, the smaller ratios, the simpler ratios, like 110 to 220, sound nice to us. That's what we think of as a pretty sound. And the ones that are farther up the scale and more complex math sound like more dissonant to us. And so even the element of a pleasing sound is just mathematical simplicity. Our brains look for patterns, and we like simplicity. So what you're hearing is mathematical ratios. And now the mathematician is nodding at me. Thank you. So if you're an artsy person, you just enjoy music, and it's beautiful. If you're a math sciencey person, you can go down a deep rabbit hole on the physics of bioacoustics. I'm not a math or a science person. I became a musician so I could count to four and start over. But I do appreciate the beauty of math and the fact that this chord... We didn't invent that at some point in history. We discovered it. We dug it out of the properties of the physics of sound that have always existed. God invented that chord, and God invented our ears to make us like that sound, to make us get emotional satisfaction out of the simplicity of mathematical ratios. And don't tell me that that just evolved out of an explosion. That's ridiculous.
Awesome. Yeah. Talk all day, right? So when I think about this chart right here, I'm sure this is overly simplistic, but part of what we could do is if we had that pitch on the piano and you singing that pitch and Kalel with his violin playing mm-hmm. that pitch, mm-hmm. we could take this and we could actually make some of these lines a little fainter mm-hmm. because of the way that sound is coming out of that particular instrument or the instrument of your voice. And this picture, if we just brighten some lines that come out most clearly and diminished some lines in their intensity, that we would see three different pictures for your voice, the piano key, and Kalel's violin.
That's how synthesizers work. That's why we can make a computer make the sound of a violin, because we just filter out the right overtones.
And 98.5% of you never heard of this until today, and your brain's been doing it all along. Isn't God awesome? All right. So that's pitch and timbre. There you go. Eric and I said for 4 minutes, we're going to make the physics and math people happy. And I think we did because we got nodding heads. Okay. But why and how? You hear a lot these days about different parts of the brain. You know what I'm talking about? Like which parts of the brain, neuroscientists, like this part of your brain does this. We discovered that this happens in this part of your brain when you're doing this. And that's very interesting. But just because we can figure out where something happens in the brain is a long ways from figuring out why and how. And so I'm going to quote from just one of the books I love about music. This is Dan Levitin. The book is called This Is Your Brain on Music, The Science of a Human Obsession. And it's a fun book, one of many very great books. But the point for me, and he is a neuroscientist, the point for me isn't to develop a map of the brain, but to understand how it works, how the different regions coordinate their activity together, how the simple firing of neurons and shuttling around of neurotransmitters leads to thoughts, laughter, feelings of profound joy and sadness, and how all these in turn can lead us to create lasting, meaningful works of art. These are the functions of the mind, and knowing where they occur doesn't interest me unless the where can tell us something about how and why. That's a really important quote, because today you hear a lot of neuroscientists saying stuff like, we figured out that this part of the brain is activated when you feel joy. And what you should say about that is, that's cool. That is very impressive. Neuroscientists are amazing. And they're in like pre-K of understanding God's creation after all of our scientific research. The how is because God created it that way. And the why is because he is a good, loving creator who designed human beings to flourish for his glory. That's the how and the why. Music, then, can be thought of as a type of perceptual illusion in which our brain imposes structure and order on a sequence of sounds. That's just him saying what I was saying earlier, that if God didn't wire us to do this, it wouldn't exist. It's just vibrating things. But God made us love this stuff. Just how this structure leads us to experience emotional reactions is part of the mystery of music. After all, we don't get all weepy-eyed when we experience other kinds of structure in our lives, such as a balanced checkbook or the orderly arrangement of first aid products in a drugstore. Well, at least most of us don't. What is it about the particular kind of order we find in music that moves us so? Honestly, how many of you get weepy-eyed about math? That would be one of you. We know who you are. Your brain naturally gets weepy-eyed about the math of music, and you don't even know it's happening. So don't ever say again, you don't do math well. Just say, I don't consciously do math well. But unconsciously, I'm awesome. Next Bible study, we'll talk a little bit more about emotion and music's meaning and so forth. But the point for now is that the how and why are from God. Now, I want to talk about our brains and the unfolding of music over time. So I'm going to go back to the definition of music. And for me, a simple phrase that helps me, this is not a definition, this is not anything formal, this is Pastor Tim's non-ologist words. Sounds with beauty and structure cascading over time. That phrase helps me. Music is sounds, obviously, not just colors or shapes. It is sounds with beauty and structure. And that's tricky to define, I realize, especially beauty, but the point is that just when two rocks strike each other or fingers scrape on a chalkboard, it makes sound, but we don't usually call that music for a variety of reasons, but partly because it lacks beauty and structure. But then, it's sound with beauty and structure cascading over time. The time factor is absolutely essential. It's part of the difference between a song and a painting. A painting has beauty and structure. But a song has beauty and structure that play out over time. And I like the word cascading because those sounds are not just independent of each other. They all tumble over each other and connect to each other as the music goes along. So I think of sounds with beauty and structure cascading over time. And I want to just focus on this time element for a second. Levitin says, our brains are exquisitely sensitive to timing information in music. Now, who might have tuned our brains to be exquisitely sensitive to that? And again, it's very interesting because some of you are not exquisitely sensitive to time. You're always late. And yet your brain is exquisitely sensitive to teeny changes in time in music. And so as our brains pay such close attention to the timing information in music, we subconsciously try to figure it out. It's a game our brains play. Think about how kids automatically try to pick up on the rules of grammar and apply them. You don't have to tell kids to do that. They just do it. They figure out that in the past tense, we add ED, play, played, talk, talked. And they say, oh, I get it. I go to bed. Like, oh, no, sorry, dude, English is weird. But it was cool. You caught up on the pattern, right? You picked up on it. That's because without us even consciously trying, our brains try to pick up on patterns. And our brains are constantly calculating when we hear music. Think of like the preschool worksheets where you have a pattern, circle, square, triangle, circle, square. Oh, you figured it out. That's what our brains do with music. As the music unfolds over time, we're following the patterns and we're constantly trying to predict what comes next. All right, so Eric's going to illustrate this for us. First of all, he's just going to illustrate for us this sense of, I want to know what's going to come next. Like, I wonder what's next.
So here's a melody that you've never heard. It was the first idea. You have some sense of what might come next? Maybe.
Okay, so we think, I want to know what's going to come next. Then, when we start to think we figured out a little bit, not consciously again, but what our brains are saying is, boy, I kind of hope this comes next. We start cheering for something to come.
So I'll start from the beginning, and you see when you're ready for something different to happen.
Did that feel good? When we went up to that, we got a pretty similar pattern the first two times, though, with some chord changes, and then we were ready for something else, and it felt good when we got there. All right, and then when we get the pattern, we're like, ooh, I know what's coming next. Like the kid who's pumped about the preschool worksheet, right? That's what we do with music. We're pretty proud of ourselves.
So here's from the top again. Know what comes next, right?
Oh, you knew that little chord change was coming. Right? You're proud of yourself?
What's next?
Oh, yes, you just want to jump into it because you know it's there. We're good. So we sometimes get surprised by what's coming next, and we really like it. Like, oh, what a cool surprise. And sometimes we get surprised by what's coming next, and we don't like it. Like, oh, what was that? But even then, something in us sometimes is like, oh, now I know the secret. Anybody heard Haydn's Surprise Symphony? Where he's just got you going along mellow, and then all of a sudden, everything in the symphony goes at you. And the first time you hear it, you're like, what? And then the next time, you're like, I know what's coming. Why do we think that? Why do we feel that? Because God designed into our brains this incredible desire for patterns, predictions, surprises. And this is also very important for our Christian music because of how these same principles apply to music with lyrics. The words add another entire level to this. We want to know what's coming musically But then you add text, and if you're somebody who loves the Lord, and this text is about the Lord, you want to know what words are going to come next. We love it when the next verse surprises us, and we're like, oh, I love where they went there. You know, what a cool text. So songs in both music and words pull our minds along in this constant fascination and exploration. So let me give you a textual example, and then we'll pair it with the same musical example. So try just this text, okay? What is our hope in life and death? Christ alone. Christ alone. What is our only confidence? We want to know what comes next, right? It just didn't feel right to just get hung without the next lyrics. I mean, come on, couldn't we be content without a line and a half? Our brains say, no, give me the rest of the words. What is our only confidence? That our souls to him belong in your heart, by the Spirit says. Yes. Okay, you ready? Here we go. There's the answer. Please. There we go. Yes. Isn't that amazing? And I don't think that it's like half the people in the room are like, I do not know what you guys are doing. You're weird. Maybe a couple, but I think by and large, the whole room was with us on those things, right? Okay, so in congregational singing, what are we doing? We're combining both of those things. We're combining that power of music, that interest of music, that emotional impact of music with that power of text. And God knew what he was doing when he told us to sing. He knew that he had specially crafted our minds for this. All right. That was the slide I was supposed to be on. All right, last. We are going to talk about music's endless possibilities. It is endless. So let's just build some components of music together here. The way I picture it in my mind, this isn't like technically accurate, but I picture it as all these layers stacked on top of each other, and then actually you can take those layers and move them around in an infinite variety of ways. This morning, before we came to church, was listening to Magnificent, Marvelous, Matchless Love, and I was just thinking, oh my goodness, there's so much going on in that music. So many layers building together the impact that music has. With such an amazing text. I never paid enough attention to that text until this morning. I was like, this is so cool. And I thought we'd listen to it now, but we're not because we don't have time. You can go home and listen to it. All right, so we start with just this. We start with just beat, which is just like tapping rate. All right? Or sometimes this is part of what's referred to as groove. And you like it when you know the tapping rate and it doesn't like mess up on you. It's frustrating when you can't figure out what's going on with that. Okay, so we just start with that basic beat or tapping rate. And then we add to that meter, which is how those taps are grouped together. So just like, right? So that's 4, or we could do that in 3, or we could do that in 2. And Eric tells me all music in the world is in 4 or 3 or 2, and I believe him. And then we can change the feel of that by adjusting the tempo of it. So even all I'm doing is clapping, right? But even in my clapping, there's a difference you feel between and. I mean, the mood of the room is kind of different, right? Depending on which one of those I'm doing. And so we've got the tempo that plays into what we do here. So now we've already built beat, meter, and tempo, and we have yet to have a pitch, right? We don't have any notes going on here yet, so let's add a note to our beat meter and tempo. It'll give us something. All right, so you hear the tapping rate. You can tap your foot along with that. And do you hear the meter? What's our grouping? How many is in our grouping? Four, right? Okay, but that melody, can you do anything better than that melody? What do we mean by the word melody? We mean give us more than one pitch, right? Ooh. Okay, can you picture like a shape of where that just went? Even if you don't read music, there's some like shape to that melody. But I didn't hear meter. Can you hear the meter in that melody? Oh, now I think you just added something new, actually. And that is you just added rhythm. Because rhythm is the length of those pitches or notes or tones, and you change that in the very last one of those, right? Didn't we go 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3?
Oh, maybe. I didn't change it on purpose.
Go. Here we go to play the same thing. And 3, 4, 1, 2. Oh, okay. That's the beginning of what we call rhythm because that tone sounded for two of our taps instead of one of our taps. Ah, okay, that is eight taps. How many possibilities are there in just those eight taps, their tempo? Oh, tempo. Ah, does that change things? How many possibilities in those eight taps, their meter, their tempo, their rhythm, and that one melodic shape? I mean, how many things could we change? We're already, like, mathematically probably beyond what we can even calculate in all the things that we could. We're way beyond what we could calculate in those characteristics. Okay? But what happens if when he plays... See, this piano, thankfully, has more than one key. We have more than one string. So what happens if we add... Ah, oh, that's nice, isn't it? So those are just harmony notes for three of our taps, three of our pitches.
Are we good?
How many possibilities do we have now that we've just added a harmony note to a few of our pitches? We're way beyond what we can comprehend now, right? What if then we actually added an entire chord to what we're doing here? Oh, interesting. Do you hear how the chord actually helps support other things like the meter? Those chords, the way he played them, help us figure out the meter of this, how we're supposed to group those tones together. But something else we haven't changed here at all, for all the things that we've changed, is we haven't made it louder or softer. That makes a difference. Oh, what if we took text, and what if we had text that fit that louder section, but then our text changes to a different theme and fits that softer section? So now it's not only that our music's louder and softer, but really the theme of our text is louder and softer too. Isn't this genius? Who invented this? Who was the inventor of all this geniusness? There is unending possibility here. There is unending variety here. This is part of the miracle of God's design in music. But guess what? We haven't touched timbre yet. This has all been done with a single instrument. What happens if when we play those harmony notes, it's a second instrument? It's a different timbre. It's a different filtering of those overtones and that frequency, that sequence of frequencies. What if part of that, can you sing that melody for us? oh, the human voice, which is the best instrument ever, as he was saying earlier, best instrument ever because you can play with the overtones in your own voice, plus you can sing words, which makes it the best instrument ever. So what possibilities do we have now that we add timbre to the whole mix? And with all of that we've done, we don't have any words with that yet. So once we start to add words to all of that, we've got potential on top of potential on top of potential on top of potential. And that is so cool because it's partly one of the reasons why God's creative miracle of music is not just, I want to say three things at once. It's first of all, it's not just a part of God's creation that you look at and say, wow. Like, you look at the Grand Canyon and say, wow. But even the most noble of hole-digging boys cannot dig a Grand Canyon. We can't do that. You can look at a butterfly's wing and say, wow, but you don't go home and then make butterflies. You might make crafty reproductions of butterflies. But when it comes to music, you see all this genius of music, and then what can you do? Go get in your car and sing. Ah! And you might even sing something that's never been sung before because you just made it up. And it might be terrible poetry, and it might be a terrible melody, and you're like, oh, man, that's awful. But it was still something you just took God's existing creation, and you just designed something yourself. On Sundays here at GBC, we worship with actual members of the GBC family making music. Isn't that awesome? We don't just play a recording and sing along, though even if we did that, we would all be making music with our voices. That would still be this cool musical creation. But we actually create the music on the spot. Chrissy played the piano for us this morning. Isn't that amazing? So there's that part of it that's amazing. But then there's also the reality that this endless possibilities of music means that the Christian church just doesn't ever get bored. Like, when we sing old songs, and that's wonderful. And we sing kind of old songs, and that's wonderful. And we sing new songs because we are living in this day of incredible modern hymn movement. We get to sing all these new songs, and it's incredible. But you know what? We can write our own too. And if the Lord doesn't come back for 500 years, you know what? Christians 500 years from now aren't going to say, you know, back in the 2020s, they just finished music. Like, all the hymns were written, all the texts were written, all the great Christian music was written, and we've just been using it since 2024. They're never going to say that. They're going to keep, that's why the Bible can talk about the new song that always arises out of the hearts of God's people, because the possibilities here are endless. And then finally, these are the reasons why we can be certain that musical celebration, enjoyment, and worship can continue forever, forever, because God made music endless in its possibilities, boundless in its possibilities. So again, it's not like we reach a point in eternity where, oh, we finally did it. We got it all figured out. Nope. There'll be new music forever. Who can design something like that except God? And God then calls us to one word as a church, sing. And all of that that he designed and crafted flows into that when we sing. So as we said at the beginning, he does not command us to sing and then leave us impoverished. Now, I understand that some of us are like, man, I'm not much of a contributor. And God sees right through all of our weaknesses and our lack of musical understanding and all those things. Those are not the things that are essential to bring him glory. But all of us participate in the miracle of what God designed. Even when you just stand here on a Sunday morning and you just stop singing or trying to sing, and the voices of God's people just flood your heart, in those moments, there are a million things going on. But all you're feeling is built up. Isn't that cool? there are a million little frequency things going on, little timbre things going on, little timing things going on. There's rhythm, a meter, and tempo, and you're not thinking about any of that. You're just thinking, Christ alone, Christ alone. What is my only confidence? And you're hearing your brothers and sisters say, how my soul to him belongs. And your heart goes, while God does a million things. And your brain does a million things. Isn't he good? Let's pray. Father, we praise you for your goodness in this gift, this creative miracle of music. And so as we rejoice in what you've done, may we be grateful recipients of your gift and good stewards of it, that you might be honored by our delight in your creation, our use of your creation in our church and in our lives. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.